Welcome to Education Currents, a show designed to provide educational news and commentary from a Christian worldview. The greatest resource any community has is its children. And by providing for them the best possible education, we are providing for ourselves and future generations. Join us as we explore the latest social and political issues surrounding education today.
Welcome, I'm Dr. Richard Tooley, and with me here today is Dr. Rose Gamblin, and we're going to be talking today about one of the more recent things that are going on in academia and how it is permeating and working its way down through the school systems and some of the impacts and its roots, and that is diversity studies. And it comes in a lot of different varieties. You know, there's diversity studies, there's cultural studies, multicultural, and they call it multiculturalism, and different things like that. And so when we start talking about that, let's go here first, and I'm going to ask you a question, Dr. Gamblin. When you are working in a classroom, in a school setting, is it multicultural?
It is always multicultural in this day and age. All of our classrooms are multicultural. In fact, part of the certification that I have received is being multiculturally competent is how I guess it's worded. And I've often thought that sounds like a really good thing. So why would diversity studies, as wonderful as it sounds, why would it be a negative thing?
Well, that's interesting, because if you were to just study culture, and there, you know, that's what sociology has always been about, is studying cultures, different cultures and different societies. So we have that. But multiculturalism or diversity studies actually focus on oppression. What causes oppression in a minority? What causes it to be oppressed by a minority, by a majority? So you end up with this oppression thing. And the idea behind it is that if you can study the oppression, you can find ways to stop it from happening. But if you think about where we are in society today, it's kind of interesting. If you say something that offends someone else, no matter how small it is, you suddenly are condemned for it. Where it used to be, you could have an opinion. The other person could have an opinion. If you disagreed, there wasn't any issues of being offended. But when you move into diversity studies, the idea is that a majority culture oppresses a minority culture such that the minority culture lacks the capacity to express itself.
Okay, so I'd like to run potential topics by you in the framework of diversity studies looks at the inequalities. I want to look at it first from the diversity paradigm and then what you think would be a better paradigm. Okay, we'll start with first the most obvious one, which is the African-American issue.
Okay, so if we look at it from a diversity perspective, the American culture, what we would call the white, people might want to call it the white culture, oppresses the African-American culture such that they can't get ahead. They can't. They find themselves more often the object of police brutality. They might find themselves more often not being able to get the higher paid jobs. These are the kinds of things that are substantive issues. Mm-hmm. They more often might hear racial slurs, etc., that are put downs to them. So the consequence of something like that is a built-in prejudice. You start by building in a prejudice instantly, which says that majority culture is oppressing us, and so we have to watch out for that majority culture. That's one of the things that could come out of that instantly. Is there oppression? Absolutely, there's oppression. There's plenty of, when you have social classes, you have oppression. It doesn't matter whether you're poor white, poor black, poor Asian, poor Hispanic, or rich in each of those categories. The oppression for the poor is much worse than the oppression is for the rich, we say. Part of the oppression, though, is money. Mm-hmm. You know, just if you have lots of money, you have a lot less oppression. So when you think about it if I were to look at it from that perspective, that's one thing. If I look at it then from another perspective, when I walk into a classroom and I have a classroom that is mixed ethnic, I have Hispanics, African Americans, Caucasians, all commingling in the same classroom. Now, I need to take and scrape off some of the baggage that all of them are wearing and get them to function together in the classroom. And here's where I think some of the things can happen that we don't have to have other places. And that is, I need to teach respect there in the classroom. I need to be able to teach respect for each other and respect for yourself.
Well, then that kind of leads to the next subject, which would be religious diversity. Now, from a diversity study, there would be the looking at which groups oppress which groups based on their religion.
Yes. And in the United States, when you look at that, the obvious oppressor is Christianity, because Christianity is the majority of the nation. So all other religions or non-religions are oppressed by it. There's where you see things like you cannot have the Pledge of Allegiance. They want to take the God part out of the Pledge of Allegiance. And, you know.
So do you feel that because of that sense of oppression, it's actually caused more of that type of behavior where we're taking, you know, in God we trust out of the money even kind of thing?
Yes, it does. And it's a war. It actually ends up being a war against the social contract of the United States in particular. Mm-hmm. Because the United States, if you look through the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution, basically within there, we recognize that the source of authority comes from God to the people, from the people to the government. That's the flow, that the government receives its authority from the people. The people receive their authority from God. The rights, the unalienable rights that we have, life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness, all come from God, according to our Declaration of Independence. Okay, so when we take this now and we look at the diversity within the nation, we have Islamic, we have atheists, agnostics, Christians, Buddhists, Hindus, etc., all of these other ones. And now, but the majority of the nation is Christian, quotes. We call it Christian or Catholic. And we are the oppressors. The Christians become the oppressors because we want to have our nativity scenes at Christmas time. And we want to be able to express our religion. We feel compelled to, because we also, as Christians tend to have this needing to go out and evangelize. So, but that's viewed as oppressive to these other entities who do not believe the way we do. So now you find a pushback that goes on there. And the perfect storm is that you use this oppression mentality with the court system that has created this separation of church and state, which is a good thing to have, because state can be the most oppressive of all. Government is horribly oppressive. So you have this now where they're using government to create a separation of church and state that really wasn't intended in the Constitution, but, you know, it's what we live with. But if we were to have changed things, if you were to look back a little bit at the way the country was before, sure, we were largely Christian, but nobody got upset if there was a nativity scene out there, and nobody really got upset if somebody put up whatever they wanted to put up. The interesting thing about it is where you have, for instance, atheist scenes, the only thing that atheist scenes can do is be anti-Christian, where Christian scenes are not anti-atheist. Christian scenes are simply about the Christian culture. So there's some differences there in how we should approach it. Now, in a school setting, if you were to take it into the classroom and you're dealing with young people in a classroom, there again, what do you do to allow for people to feel not oppressed and to feel equal? And I think you come back again to the point of respecting each other.
Now, I have to interject here. It's going to be quite interesting. I know you're going to be serving overseas in a country that has a definitely Buddhist influence, Taoism.
Yeah.
And so as you're teaching in that venue, how do you imagine yourself doing equality, if you know, or a respect of all of the different belief systems that you'll be working with that are not, or that are no longer Christian.
Well, once you, again, when you go to those places, one of the things that we should consider both here or there or anywhere is we don't want to be oppressive. We don't want to push our belief system down somebody else's throat, ever. Do we want to be able to introduce them to it? Yes. We want to be able to give them the opportunity to dialogue. The public forum should be a place where dialogue happens, of all kinds of dialogue. What happens here, though, is that we end up stopping dialogue because of the concept of oppression. Now, where I'm going, I will be a minority.
Okay? Yeah, but you will be considered powerful because you're a teacher, you're a professor.
And I need to there, just as I would here, need to respect the rights of the other people around me and ask the same that they do for me. It's not going to be within my purview to do anything other than if they have questions, answer their questions on those issues. And then by my life, introduce Christ.
Well, we are talking about diversity studies and the fact that it focuses on the oppression. You know, that's the focus. We have to take a break right here, but when we come back, I want to talk about women's studies. We'll be right back. You've been listening to Education Currents. Be sure and like us on our Education Currents Facebook page and consider joining MRG Media in this radio ministry. You can call us anytime at 301-824-3162. That's 301-824-3162. Or write to MRG Media at P.O. Box 413, Smithsburg, Maryland, 21783. That's P.O. Box 413, Smithsburg, Maryland, 21783. Welcome back. I'm Dr. Rose Gamblin, and I'm kind of just really pinning Dr. Richard Tooley here to the wall about diversity studies. It seems like quite a great idea that we should, you know, include everybody and study them and value their cultures. But it does have an insidious negativity in the fact that it focuses on the negative. And so I was, before the break, I was asking Dr. Tooley to just kind of give an overview of the subject from the diversity study perspective, and then what it might be a better way. In other words, instead of focusing on the negative, focus on the positive. And now we're going to talk about women's studies. You know, throughout, I think ever since Eve, women have been subservient to men.
That is true. However, I would point out that oftentimes the mentality is what creates some of that, quote, subservientism. For example, if you look at pay scale between men and women, men tend to make more money than women do. There are lots of different reasons for that. Yes, some of those reasons are because of prejudice and discrimination. Some of those, on the other hand, are because women are willing to accept less pay to do what they want to do. Unlike men, who view their job as themselves, women don't necessarily view their job as themselves. Women have a life, and it goes beyond that. And so there's nuanced difference in there where that's not being taken into account. So when you start talking about using diversity studies, here's where a fundamental difference is, I think. Diversity studies focus on the oppressed. What about inclusion? How can you take that and create inclusion? For instance, the concept of the United States was this melting pot. When people came here, they wanted to be American. They wanted the American lifestyle. They wanted to be seen as American first. And then they could have whatever their culture was afterwards. Well, now to be an American could be considered oppressive because the majority of people are American. So if you're not American first, now you fall into one of the oppressed classes if you go with diversity studies. So what about inclusion? Can you reach the same nirvana, if you want to talk about it like that, through an inclusion process as opposed to focusing on losing, being oppressed? Can you get it? You know, the roots of diversity studies comes from Karl Marx.
Oh, dear.
So you can see now that you have different interpretations of what equality is. And therein is part of the rub.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so to manufacture an equality always requires a superclass if you're going to manufacture that equality.
Mm.
And so even when you went into communist countries, you had to have a superclass to make sure that everybody else did it. Animal Farm is a great example. The pigs lived in the house. Everybody else lived in the barnyard. You know, so you end up with a superclass. Somebody has to make sure that this equality that we're creating happens. On the other hand, the United States was not shaped by Karl Marx. It was shaped by a different set of standards. John Locke and Rousseau and Jefferson was a huge one in it. And they saw equality as something different. You had equal opportunity. And it took us a long time to get to the point where we recognized that slavery was not something that was part of our vision of who we were. And slavery has left us with a bad taste in our mouth. Slavery has left us with a legacy of, especially some of the things they did after slavery to try and fix things, the Jim Crow laws. And the way the South was treated after the war left this divide and that is going on. But we took this thing, and if you followed what happened, we went from where Martin Luther King practiced non-violent demonstrations and things to create an awareness. And the civil rights movement, you know, came in to try and help some of these things. And it was, I think if you were to talk to Martin Luther King, he would not be talking about oppression. He would be talking about raising a standard of living and raising the opportunity.
Yeah, finding ways to raise the opportunity. Yeah. I have to bring in another issue since you've talked about the United States and our values. What about the American Indian?
The American Indian is a sad story, too. Part of the thing that wrapped us into this concept of manifest destiny.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it put us where, okay, now we're going to take Indians and we're going to put them out on a reservation somewhere. Now, if you look at that, there's some interesting things that are going on there. For example, if you go up into Connecticut and Massachusetts, some of the Indian reservations up there are doing very, very, very well. They have casinos and everything else. They're making a mint off of the American dream. And the Indians are doing very well. In other areas, they're not doing so well. It's harder for them to be able to get traction and to make it. Part of it is this. There are Indians who have chosen to integrate. They have chosen to become Americans. Indians aren't Americans, really, technically. I mean, people will say they're the first ones, but as a nation, they live on reservations. Those reservations, when you go onto an Indian reservation, as you're driving onto that reservation, it says you're leaving the United States. So you're going into a self-managed, albeit somewhat fake, setup.
Yeah.
Now, if you want to talk about oppression, that is an area where you could talk about oppression in a lot of those cases. And part of it, though, is a reflection, the same reflection that you have in the underclass of society as a whole. Poor, don't see much hope, and so consequently it's a downward spiral that goes on. And if you look at the inner city, much of the inner city, you find the same downward spiral. But it's an interesting thing if you look at different cultures in the inner city. For instance, among the Hispanic people in the inner city, they have a tendency to try to create this lifeline. They will find their best and brightest and make sure that the best and brightest get the proper education so that when that person gets that education, they can help pull the rest of the family up with them. So they're not licking their wounds and just feeling about how bad they're going. They actually are seeing the American dream, and they're searching for the American dream. There's another class among that group, too, that make a lot of money, send it back home, and go back and live like kings and queens. So, you know, there's different ways of approaching it. You know, Chinatown used to be considered a poor area, too, but Chinatown does very well. You know, it's using the government of this country, using the philosophy of this country to help elevate yourself to the American dream.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know we're just about done here, and I have one more topic I want to talk about. But I wanted to say, when we were talking about women and diversity studies and oppression, I do have to say that in the United States, women probably experience the most freedoms and the most opportunities, even if their wages are still a little under what the man is making overall. There's still hope there, and I believe it's because of the Christian values of respect.
Yeah, it is. One of the things, too, that this country has gone to, and I think it's something that could be addressed even in another show, a whole bunch about, is what we consider success. Oftentimes, we spend, actually in this country, we've transitioned from a point where we considered success being part of, where success was being part of your community, being involved in your community, being fulfilled through the service to your community, the give and take that go on within a community, your influence, etc., to where being successful meant you made a lot of money. So we moved to a commercial concept of success, as opposed to success being simply how you interacted with people, how people interacted with you, social awareness, being able to be part of the society that you're in. That was success.
Well, we're talking about diversity studies and the idea that it focuses on the inequalities between gender, age, race, religion, nationality, ethnicity, sexuality, socioeconomic, and a theme through it all has been money. Unfortunately, money. But in conclusion, what would you tell that college student that maybe is taking a diversity studies class right now? What would you tell them just to help them as they go through it? Because it's kind of depressing to study all the different ways people have been oppressed and mistreated.
Yeah, I would say, yes, you need to look at that, but then you need to look at the other side of it too. You need to look at the concept of inclusion, the concept of respect and self-respect and respect for others. Do they have validity as a process? One of the things I would also say is, you know, oftentimes, if I'm being chased by a big bear, grizzly bear, do I spend my time looking at the bear, or do I spend my time looking at where the safety is that I'm running toward? So if you spend your time looking at the oppression all the time, do you miss the opportunities because you're not learning what they are? In other words, are you better off looking at something that's really, really, really healthy and aspiring towards that, or looking at that which is sick so that you aren't aspiring toward it?
Yes.
You know, one of the old adages is you become what you see. You become what you
read. You become what you study.
Yeah. Yes. So is there oppression? Yes. Should we be sensitive to it? Yes. But is that where we want to focus? Or do we want to focus on what utopia might look like and then be able to create the inclusion that goes with that? Well, hopefully this didn't rattle too many people, but it's been good to be here, and I have only one last thing to say, and that is keep learning.
You have been listening to Education Current, a production of MRG Media Ministries. For more on this or to contact us, go to mrgmediaministries.com. That's all one word, mrgmediaministries.com.